Welcome to the For Love and Money podcast, the show where business and social purpose meet to inspire a movement for positive change. Here's your host, Carolyn Butler Madden.
Danielle Chail is founder and CEO of Coco, a knitwear company specializing in commercial hand knitting. Coco stands for Knit One, Change One, and it engages women in rural villages in the south of Tamil Nadu, India, to produce artisan knitwear for global fashion brands. Combined, her lifelong passions for innovation, education, and giving women a voice have enabled Danielle to make significant social contributions in both Australia and India. She's a published author. Her book, Coco, How Hand Knitting is Changing Lives and the Fashion Industry, describes the story of Coco's sisterhood and has touched the hearts of brands and consumers around the world. In this interview, Danielle shares how knitting became a passion for her from a young age, but because of family expectations, how she initially took an academic path before eventually finding her way back to fashion. She shares the story of how new Australian government legislation in the fashion industry that came in through the Gillard era forced her to find knitters outside of the country, which took her to southern India. Coco was established in Australia by Danielle in partnership with women who live in rural villages of Tamil Nadu, which is in southern India. So Danielle talks about what began as a solution to producing hand-knitted garments offshore has now become a sisterhood of artisans and a business with the UN Global Goals for Sustainable Development entwined in their DNA. They have scaled the art of hand knitting to produce commercial quantities of garments, all entirely hand knitted. And along the way, she is helping to give those women a voice, inadvertently also helping to break the economic cycle and the cycle of domestic violence that many of them have lived with. As she says in the interview, it's about supporting them to be strong, independently minded women. I really hope you enjoy this episode. Danielle, welcome to the For Love and Money podcast.
Hello, Carolyn. Thank you so much.
I'm really excited to get into our conversation and to share with our listeners all about Coco, Knit One, Change One, your business. But before we do that, I'd love you to weigh in on the first question that I ask all of my guests, which is, when you think about business, when you think about purpose in business, do you think love has any role to play in it?
It's such a good question, really. And I could answer by that old hackney phrase, love makes the world go around, doesn't it? But when you talk about business in general, most people love their business, and most people also wake up on their journey thinking, what the hell am I doing? You know, so, you know, whether they love their business, they certainly have love-hate days.
Yes.
And to relate it to whether you think having a business that gives for purpose is connected with love, I really think it is connected with that old adage, love makes the world go round. Because how can you do something with meaning and not love it? Because if you don't love it, it doesn't have meaning. It becomes meaningless. So there has to be some sort of ignited passion, not necessarily the same on every living minute, on this every living day, but somewhere there has to be some all over ignited passion.
Ignited passion, I love that. And absolutely. And I think, I mean, you and I are both founders and owners of small businesses, and we know how hard it is to own and run your own business and how many hurdles you face. And, you know, you just need to keep getting up. Every time you get knocked down, you need to keep getting up. And if there is something, you know, something worth getting up for, if you're just in it for what you're doing, you know, being an accountant, whatever it might be, without being connected to something that drives you, that higher purpose that drives you, it just wears you down more than it normally would, doesn't it? It just, I think having that connection, that passion, love, whatever you call it, it's what keeps you getting up every time and every moment. And I know you've been knocked down and got up very many times.
Never. Life's
All
a breeze.
right, Danielle, tell us about Coco. To a listener who knows nothing about Coco, what is it?
It depends who asks me the question as to how I answer that.
Ooh, that's
So,
interesting.
I kind of wear a few different hats. Sometimes I could just say, at its hardcore, we're knitwear manufacturers.
Yep.
When COVID struck, we were importer exporters, so there were no planes, so we had no business. So, I could say we run an international import export business.
Yep.
Who cares what it was in? But then, scratch the surface a bit deeper than that, and I could say, well, my job is to actually give women who haven't had the chance to have a voice and have their voice heard, my job is to get that voice heard, by everybody, really. The further their voices can be heard, from my point of view, the better. But it could be just getting their voice heard to their family. Mostly it has to start with themselves, that they actually believe their own voice. And then it can grow bigger. But the name came about because COCO stands for Knit One Garment, Change One Life.
Brilliant. And I want to get into more depth of what that's about and the women you're talking about in India. But before we do, can you share with us how Coco came to be? Like, give us a bit of your background story, and tell us how you came to be running a knitwear company that gives women a voice.
It's just fluke, really. I didn't wake up one day thinking that's what I wanted to do. But what I can tell you is when I was a little girl, I had a full-time working mother. And she went to work, and I had the measles. So she had to work out what the hell she was going to do with me. So she called her aunt, my great aunt, to come and mind me for the duration of my measles episodes so that my mother could continue to go to work. And as all spinsters did in that age, wear flat lace-up frumpy shoes with waisted dresses that came down to their ankles, it went with the stereotype from that era in the 1960s of being a spinster and knitting. So she'd never had children of her own, and what was she going to do with me? She taught me how to knit. So that was the beginning of the journey, really. And on day one, when my mother came home from work, like all mothers, oh, what did you do today? And I'm like, I made this. And
Love
then,
it.
in her own way, my mother has been supportive of what I do. So the next day, when she came home, she stopped by at what was then the local haberdashery store and bought for me one ball of every colour of that particular yarn. And in that day, that was a real thing. I considered it very, very special. Before even using those balls to knit, I played with them for hours because the 72 packet of colouring in pencils that are available now in the market weren't available then.
Yeah.
So this was the first time ever, like there were no big pencil sets to play with colours. So I sat there playing with all the pastel colours, all the bright colours. I'd put them in all sorts of orders for days on end. And then, true to my mother's force, with that came a book, 100 Knitted Stitches. So during the duration of my measles, I used one ball, one stitch, and I knitted all those goddamn stitches in that book.
Love it.
And when I showed my auntie, when it was finished, this whole bundle of squares, she said to me, "Oh, that's ours. You can't throw that away. Give it to me." And she sewed it together and made it into a blanket.
Oh, beautiful.
Then I took that blanket to school just to show my friends, look what I made. I'd never received so much attention in my whole life.
Wow.
So, as a young child, that's how I learnt love, by making beautiful things for people. And that was the beginning of my journey.
Oh, that's beautiful. That's beautiful. Your background, it's such an interesting background. You're an academic, you're a music teacher. Didn't you have a boutique at some point? Tell us a little bit about that. I'm curious as to how you went from that child to running knitting circles in rural India.
I'll take you on the chronological journey. Both my parents were in business, so I have business in my DNA. So I didn't have to think about that. That's a no-brainer for me. My parents were pharmacists, and I learned to sell lipstick sitting on top of a counter. You know, if you wore this color lipstick, it'll make you look so much nicer. If you wore this garment, it'll make you look really lovely. So I've had that in me since I was a young child. That's intuitive. But that happened, that knitting episode story that I just told you happened when I was in grade 4 or 5 at school. And then what happened is by the time I got to year 8, it was called grade 8 in that era, I asked my mother if I could change schools and go to a fashion school where I could study textiles and knitting. And if looks could kill, I can't think of the equivalent in these days, but in those days it was like asking my mother to be a stand-up comedian or something, you know, whatever. It's a different era now. But I just got that look to have, don't even think about it. Like, don't ask me ever again the answers. Don't, it's not even the remotest possibility. So, you know, in order to please my parents, I had to go to university and get a real job. So I did. So that's how I ended up with a PhD in music. But I turned 40, you know, I'm well entrenched in above middle age now. But when I turned 40, you think 40 is middle age, but I still think I'm middle age, and it's a few decades on from that. But when I turned 40, I woke up and I thought, I don't want to be one of these people who died and thought, I always wish I had, but. So I left music and opened a hand knitting store in Brisbane. And I started that from scratch and grew that to be Australia's largest independent retail store. At its peak,
Wow.
we did 24 shows a year. Left that and wanted to start my own brand because I learned a lot about the industry. Started it, and within less than 12 months of starting it, the Gillard government was in power. And the legislation changed to make it not legal to employ women from home to do that part-time knitting. And that's when Bonds went offshore and all the other brands in Australia, other people might remember that era, that's when that went offshore. So I too was at the receiving end of that. And I'd only literally 5 minutes ago changed career. So I'm like, oh, what the hell am I going to do now? So for a while I wasn't doing anything and everyone said, oh, why don't you go back? And I'm like, no, it's like going back to an old boyfriend, right? You just got to move on. Life moves on. So I kept moving on and I was sitting there for a while doing nothing for a few months. And I've always been very lucky in life. I've met the right person that I needed at the right time. And I met somebody who said to me, Danielle, a friend of mine's in India and I think that they might be the solution to your product, I'll in you know your situation, so I'll introduce you. So they introduced me, and then that's how the whole thing started in India.
And so when was this? What year was this?
Oh, 2012.
Okay, all right. So you're in
Yesterday.
India. So you're in India. It feels like yesterday, does it? You're in India. How did you start? I think a lot of people would be interested in how do you go to a foreign country and start something like this?
You might be interested to know the word I'm going to give. It's your opening word of this entire podcast, capital L for love.
There you go.
I fell in love with the women. And I was determined that I wasn't going back to my old career. And this was the only way to do it. So they took my hand and I took them. And we've walked side by side for the last decade plus, plus, plus.
That's amazing. Now, if you could tell our listeners a bit more about the business and how it works, and a little bit about the women and the villagers you employ. Just can you paint a picture of what cocoa is?
Well, that's a very big question. You know, what we do, we're commercial hand knit manufacturers. So anybody who is a brand who would like anything knitted, and anybody who is a corporate who believes in supporting us or giving women a voice, who believes in has a strong corporate social responsibility program. You know, we've knitted coasters, wall hangings, logo branded vests, jumpers, Christmas decorations for corporates, as well as brands. As long as it's hand knitting, we do it. So that's what we do. You just go to our website, www.coco.global, and send me a message.
So I guess where I'm going with this, Danielle, I remember for a time following you on Facebook, and this was a few years ago, and you would share stories of the women who worked for Coco. And I mean, some of the stories you shared were absolute, I mean, they were amazing. What came through for me so clearly was this transformation that you're creating through the business and the empowerment of women. I mean, some of the stories you shared showed their backgrounds, what they were challenged with, and by working with you, how it helped to change them. And I would love our listeners to get a sense of that, you know, whether it's a story of one woman that you can share or a more general sense of how that occurs.
Well, it wasn't my intention, but by default, we break the economic cycle, the financial cycle, and the domestic violence cycle of every village we enter. And I don't set about changing anybody's life, but what we do have is strong leadership, and I'd be the first to say that that's me, strong, strict leadership. And one of the things that everybody needs for leadership is just always being there. It's like being a parent. You know, if you're a parent and you're half mast there, your children will act out. So it's the same thing, really. It's exactly the same thing. It's just a matter of showing up and the types of conversations that you have. And basically, from the very beginning, I was there. And it doesn't really matter what country it is. I mean, you are who you are, right? As I say to a lot of people, I'm not schizophrenic, and no, not too many of my friends are. So, you know, it doesn't matter what country it'll be in. I treat the people that I work with exactly the same. But having said that, these women grew up to be very, very compliant. And Carolyn, you don't need me to tell you couldn't have on your podcast a more opposite of compliant person out of all the people that you interview if you tried. So because of that match, it kind of worked. So these women grew up being the children of parents who did not go to school, and they didn't go to school. And so when you're the only child, you know, it's labor, like pick lentils, or the only way that they knew love was by helping their parents either on the farm with manual tasks around the house or whatever. And if they chose not to, I don't know, wash the dishes on this particular day, the only way that they knew also how to get reminded was by getting a good bash over the head. It was not, you know, verbally loud and physically loud as well. So that's the circumstance that they were raised in. And then they have arranged marriage. Villages run in traditions. So there's no space for them to think there either. They have to, you know, do what their parents say. Though India's changed a lot now in the decade that I've been there. But back in the day, they had arranged marriage. And then they have to be compliant to what their husband tells them to do. So we've broken all that. And so, you know, we've raised very strong, independent women through lots of things. You know, I remember one day just sitting and talking to one of the girls, and she said to me, "Danielle, the reason I'm so fat is that I just can't stand having sex with my husband, and when I'm fat like this, he won't touch me, so I'm really, really happy." And her husband is like always drunk, And so
Yeah.
whenever he's drunk, he just bashes her. So
Mm.
I would say things to her like, "So when was the last time he hit you? And what did you do when he hits you?" And she'd say, "I start screaming at him." And I'm like, "Did it do any good?" She's like, "No." And I'm like, "So why do you do it? Like, do you know that he's getting drunk?" "Yes, he gets drunk at work." "So why do you let him in the house like that?" You know, so I just ask different questions that make them think. And so I'm not their panacea for problem solving, but we have very strong independence of thinking procedures in place. So from the very beginning, even at work when they were knitting, same or different. They couldn't answer the question. This is the first time they'd ever been asked to think in their whole life. So after years of being taught how to think, you know, they tell me, "You've given us wings to fly."
Wow. So for our listeners, I know Danielle. We're friends, and we've had many conversations. And the thing that strikes me about you is that you have this incredibly strong curiosity about everything that you do. You've just got a very curious mind, and it seems to me that that curiosity, has a really valuable place through Coco, with the
It's
women that you're.
really a matter of just supporting those around you, that I'm actually very focused. Like, it's not curious as a meandering sense. It's like I'm focused, and it's like if I could be quite ruthless and say, you know, as a human being, how can anybody give of their best if they have to go home and do that, put up with that nonsense every day? Like, I've got women there who have told me, you know, and I'd ask all sorts of questions, and like, we've known each other, and you know, the more you know someone, the more you can share more intimate details. And I have one girl who told me, "Danielle, every day when I walk home, the first thing my husband says to me, if I ask him, 'How was your day?' he says to me, 'Well, it'd be much better if I never had to look at your face.'"
Well, so the questions that you're posing to them, you're talking what in the knitting circle as they're knitting.
This is
Yeah.
like at lunchtime or after work
Okay.
or something like that.
Okay. So they come, the background you described, they're very compliant, they don't have any financial independence.
They didn't have,
Yeah.
and they were compliant at home, but I don't exhibit the same discipline as their parents. So this is the first time they have a bit of freedom as well, right? So to get them at work at 9 o'clock and not 9:10, that in itself was a massive challenge.
Yeah.
You know, so it's the juxtaposition of discipline with freedom.
Yeah, which I can imagine is quite challenging in itself. So it's very much a transformation. And don't you have some education apart from, these conversations? Isn't there some education that comes as part of your employment?
Well, that is education for them. And
Yeah.
I think what you're probably referring to when you use the word education is like school education,
Yeah.
because educating and learning how to stick up for yourself is
Yep.
definitely education that needs to be at
100%.
the top of the list. So that is education. And what you're referring to is like formal education from school, like reading and maths. And yes, the ladies had to learn all that to be able to read knitting patterns.
Yeah, okay, fantastic. And so you're giving them a voice. So the purpose of Coco is to give women a voice.
Is supply hand-knitted garments to whoever wants it. This is a
Okay.
byproduct.
Okay, so the byproduct of that is to give women a voice, but your driving purpose is
It's a
more
business.
about the
We're a
product.
for-profit business, and that's
Yep.
what we do. It
Okay.
just so happens to be in rural India where I've had a million opportunities in life, and these women have not had a million opportunities in life. And so, as a result of having me as their leader, it's enabled them to have many more opportunities than they would have had otherwise.
Enjoying the podcast? If you're looking for more inspiration, head to our website, thecauseeffect.com.au. for more resources on how you can start using your business as a force for good. Or buy the For Love and Money book. Every copy sold allows us to protect 1 square meter of rainforest. Help us save 10,000 square meters by 2025. I find it so fascinating that you see this as a byproduct and not the thing that drives you. And I'll tell you why I think that, okay? Because I think it was during COVID, and I can't remember if it was a conversation we had or if it was a post I saw, but you were really worried about, like, you seem to be consumed about the women's welfare and being able to continue to support them.
Absolutely, because as a boss, as a business owner, I had 250 staff. Business owner, if you have to fire your staff, has responsibilities that go with that.
Yeah, but it's not the thing that drives you to keep showing up day in, day out. It is more about the business. I'm just curious in exploring this a little bit.
They're inseparable, because if you have people that you employ, I had a choice of shutting down the business. We're an import-export business. There are no planes.
Yeah.
Right? There is no business. And nobody has an income, me included. We're all in it together.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a business. Yeah, and there's staff that I employ. Like, it's not really me and them. It's like, well, can I hold it together by a thread, excuse the pun, or will the thread break when there's no import and no planes?
Yeah.
And one thing I know about myself, it's probably from being on the spectrum, really, you know, one of these high functioning people. I'm a very, very strong lateral thinker. So, you know, there's always a way, isn't there? There's always a way.
Mm. So let me ask you this. If legislation changed, if you were able to deliver the same hand knitted garments to the same quality level and as profitably as you're able to do it now, but through an Australian workforce, would you make that change?
It's not, life isn't a matter of either or. It's not so black and white. It would give another avenue to possibly expand. Like, there's no reason not to consider all options.
Okay. You know why I'm asking you these questions, don't you?
Because, not at all. I mean,
no? Okay, because the conversation we're having, you've been very clear that the purpose of your business is to... God, I need to be very careful with how I word this because you're going to catch me on it, but to create beautiful hand-knitted garments for the market. Did I do that right?
Well, I think rather than me judging you, what's really interesting here, Carolyn, that you put out is what makes my communication with the ladies so successful and so life-changing. Because they also will tell you, when you speak with Danielle, you have to think, because language is incredibly important.
Yes, yes, absolutely.
And they have learned that when they're communicating with the other fellow workers and knitters. Like, if you want something from somebody, you've got to get the language right, the tone of voice right, and the timing right. And it's the same when they want something from their husband. It's like, is that what you want? Is that what you said? Do they match? And so that is what has actually brought about the education and the transformation.
Yeah. Well, I guess it's really interesting because your music background, music is very highly related to language.
Well, knitting is a language as well. They're both languages.
Yeah,
knitting is a massive language. That's what keeps me enthralled. There are thousands and thousands of stitches. When you write a composition, it's like writing a pattern. It's like creating the jumper. And when the brands sell it and somebody wears it around the street, that's like being, and somebody sees it, that's like being in the audience of a performance. It is a language. They are both equal languages, and it's the strength that I had in music of thinking sequentially and so pedagogically that was just literally transferred. So one is an oral art, A-U-R-A-L with the ear, and the other one is a visual art, but it's the same thing.
And it's interesting how that, like the very story you told us at the beginning of your childhood, has woven its way through to what you're doing today. But that you've been able to knit into that, a way to like actually really, support women and help them help themselves to become more independent.
I support them. I support them to get whatever it is that they would like.
And it's really interesting. I wrote down you said something about the women. Then you sounded like a parent when you were talking about them. I can't remember the exact
I
term that
am
you,
like their parent.
but yeah, it sounded
They
like.
have no clue of what to do about most life things that they want, like you and I. Like, basically, we all want, we want happiness for ourselves. We want satisfying relationship for ourselves. For those of us that have children, you want your child to have a stable growing life. And all of us would always wish that we tweaked our life a bit, that our children tweaked our life a bit. The thing that I love working about these ladies, like, they're no different to you and I. They're just human beings. Whereas people kind of think because it's in some rural village in a developing country that it's some miracle thing. We're all just normal human beings wanting the
Of
same
course.
thing in life.
Of course. And also, so you're speaking to them, during breaks and during lunch hours. Do they speak to each other? Like, are you able to help them speak to each other and learn how to lean on each other and be able to share their experiences?
Well, I don't know any group of women around the entire world that don't get together for lunch and blah, blah. So, that's a normal thing. But because you asked when they share, I think what you really mean is, do they share their life's problems and tribulations with each other? And are they a psychological support network to each other? And yes, like all women, oh, at home this happened and I had to do this and this didn't happen and blah, blah, blah. That's a normal thing of life, I think. But what I bring to the table for them, and it started in a work environment and it's the same thing and it went socially, is from the very beginning, when they used to ask me so many questions, I'm like, oh my God, I'm not their Panadol for their issues in life and their brain, right? So I would always answer with, what do you think? So if they'd come to me with an issue or something that they couldn't decide, I would always ask it back, first of all, what's your thought on this? I'm happy to share with you, but what do you think? And then 9 times out of 10, they'd say, I don't know. And I would answer, I bet you do. Because most people actually do know what they want. So, what we would do sometimes if people get stuck is that we'd sit in a circle. And, initially I would facilitate what's the issue. And then everybody would go around the circle giving an answer. So, then the person with the issue, I would say, are you right now? Yes, thank you. So I never had to solve, and I never actually have solved anything that has crossed their path that they would like to do. It's
And
all self-driven, and they've done it themselves.
it goes back to I found that phrase that sounded very parental to me, but it goes back to that because it goes back to you said we are raising strong, independent women. Your
I'm role
words.
modeling for them, so they can't not be like that with me at the helm.
As you said, your presence is a very strict presence. Your curiosity is very focused. But you don't ra raise or support strong, independent women by telling them the answers. It's about getting them to, think about what the answer might be for that particular question and getting them to think about it. And that's far more valuable than someone giving the answer themselves. So Let's bring it back to love and money, the theme of this podcast. What is your view on the relationship between the two? Love and money, purpose and profit, however you want to put it. What are your thoughts on that?
The truth of the issue is I've never actually thought about it. Right?
Okay.
Never.
Gut feel. Gut feel.
I can't spend my whole day doing things I don't like. So for me, it all has to be in the flow together. That's it in an essence, because you can't have one without the other. Like
one.
If people have a lot of money and no love and they don't know what's going to get them out of bed in the morning, I think they must be very miserable souls.
Yeah.
So they're probably an equal triangle, Carolyn, somewhere in there.
And yeah, and I think it comes down to the energy and vitality you bring to your business through the good times and the bad times. You know, if you're driven by, you know, love or care, however you want to put it, of something that connects you viscerally to the business, you're going to be able to bring more of that energy. And that's going to show up in a more successful business, usually. You know, that is, I think that is the best kind of business that you can build, one that is fueled by love of something greater or passion, rather than just, you know, money, 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 cut, you know, do whatever you can do, have to do in order to maximize the amount of money you make. And you cut love out of the equation, and you might short term build a very successful, profitable business. I'd say profitable business, maybe not successful, if you believe that success lies in more than just money. But yeah, and I think that's exactly what you have built. And I find it fascinating that you know, the Gillard government and what you described there. Almost, you know, it was an accident. It wasn't intentional that you went out to India in the first place. It was, you know, seeking a solution to deliver on what you wanted to deliver. And the reason I raise that, and I'd love your thoughts on that, on this, is I know a lot of people in business are like, oh, what's my purpose? You know, how do I connect to my purpose? And sometimes, you know, it's just a path that you happen to take for whatever reason you happen to take it that can lead you to something that connects you to something that becomes incredibly important to you and drives you further.
Maybe, but if you'd like to articulate what consciously would give you purpose, and I know this is your business, I believe if you seek in your life between the ages of when you were, whatever you can remember, from the very earliest to when you were somewhere between 10 and 12, most people have something in those, that decade and a bit, of something that they really, really feel connected to, that they really love. And somehow or other, it's a matter of entwining that part of your life and connecting it with where you are now.
That's really interesting. And I want to share something that happened to me that goes back to that point, Danielle. Have you ever read the book by Danielle Laporte? I'll put it in the show notes. The whole book is about helping you identify your core desired feelings, because the philosophy of the book is everything we want in life comes down to chasing a feeling that we want to get. It's called the desire map experience. So everything, you know, whether it's a new house or a car or a new job or a friend or whatever it may be, it's about a feeling that you want to achieve. And I read this book years and years ago and I loved it. And it helps you map out your core desired feelings in different parts of your life. And anyway, that was years ago. And then probably about 7 years later, I was sitting in at a business conference and the facilitator got us to do this exercise. And he said, I want you to think back to a time when you were young. Before you'd started work and you wanted to be something, you might have wanted to be a pilot or whatever it was, but you really wanted to be something. What was it? Write it down and write down why. And then share on your table. And I did. And I wrote down on my piece of paper, because I never had a desire for a career. I wrote down, I wanted to be a child of the universe. I wanted to travel and experience all sorts of different things. And I wrote three things down, why I wanted that. And it was like, I want freedom. I want to be able to go, where I want to. I want to connect with people from different cultures, and understand, and just connect with others. And the third one was vitality. I want to feel that energy that comes with all of that. And I looked at those three things and I thought, oh my God, they look really familiar. And I was kind of looking at it and wondering, and then it hit me and it was like, ah, those are my core desired feelings: freedom, connection, and vitality. So the same feelings that I wanted when I was 15 years old are the feelings I'm still chasing as an adult, and I still value as an adult, only I'm finding different ways to deliver on them. And I just thought that was fascinating, right? And it goes exactly back to what you said, which is go back to your childhood, and there is something there, something that, connects you to what is important to you.
It is.
So, given your experience with Coco, I'd love you to just share any advice that you have to other business leaders who are considering, how else they might approach business, that's not just all about the, let's just create a business that absolutely maximizes the profit we make and is the shortest cut to delivering that, and nothing else matters. Those business leaders who are starting to look around and go, I want something more. I've got a successful business, but it's not enough. I feel like there's more. Do you have any advice for them?
I guess my style is more collaborative when facilitating change rather than giving advice. But really, I think those people probably too have a burning desire in their heart of what they really like. And they were probably driven by that. The world thinks it's bad. And you might be surprised to know that I would be the last person who criticizes that. Because those people who are like that often are driven because all they want is the love from their family and they want to provide the best for their family. And I think we have to be very careful about who we criticize and why, because they've turned themselves inside out to be the best provider for their family or for themselves. They might have something to prove within themselves. Like some people who are very successful have a drive in themselves to show that they can do it. And then they've done it, and it's like, and what next? So most of those people do have a love and a connection, but it might not just be made as explicit as they'd like it to be.
Thank you. I love that. And it's real food for thought, for people who are asking that question. It doesn't have to fit a certain model. It just could be a different way of how you frame things and how you reframe the way you look at it. So, Danielle, thank you so much for coming on the podcast and sharing with us, what you have built into a beautiful business, Coco. We will include links in the show notes. And any last thing you'd like to share with our listeners about yourself or Coco?
No, it's all good. Thanks so much, Carolyn.
Thanks, Danielle.
Pleasure, anytime.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the For Love and Money podcast. If you'd like to take a deeper dive into the purpose movement, visit us at thecauseeffect.com.au. And remember, doing good is good for business. So if you're not doing good, then what are you doing?